propagating truth in a world of lies. You are listening to the John Age Project.
Welcome to the Anomic Age. I'm your host, John Age. Thank you for joining me today on the program. We're at February 8th, 2019, and we're all the way up to episode number 9. So thank you for joining me. If you haven't done so, please check out AnomicAge.com, and you'll find all the links to contact me, all the social media stuff, and perhaps more importantly, there's a donate button down there at the bottom right. Please make a donation. That would be very kind of you. I'm going to cut the news a little bit short today. To be honest, I was trying to make up a little bit of lost time since we didn't have our guest last week and it was just me. So this week we're going to have two guests, but I went way over last episode with like an hour plus of news almost. So on the hosting server side of things, it's coming a little short. So we may have to do a little less on the news and just focus on the guests. Not really what I want to do, but, got to stay financially prudent. So if you'd like to donate, please do so, and we can do more news and more guests. That's the end game of the program. Nonetheless, we're going to have Michael De Leon joining us at the end of the news segment, so that will be very informative. He's doing steeredstraight.org. He'll discuss his various books and movies and his Steered Straight program, and pretty much all things on the drug abuse, narcotics side of things, and sort of some of the major epidemics in that regard plaguing this nation. So we'll speak to him at the end of the news segment. But beforehand, we have got a huge amount of news to talk about today, and definitely a decidedly North Carolina flavor to the news today. Not really intentionally, but not really unintentionally either. It just so happens that North Carolina, the formerly great state of North Carolina, keeps popping up in the news. So we'll get into several news segments on North Carolina today. But before we do that, we got all kinds of other stuff to cover. I was about to read you this article, and another one popped up. Here we go. A second woman, this is from USA Today, a second woman accuses Virginia Lieutenant Governor Justin Fairfax of sexual assault. Man, Virginia, we got your governor in blackface. We got the lieutenant governor, several alleged incidences of sexual assault. Just keeps getting better, doesn't it? They're only a state away, North Carolina, and I fear that you are not far behind. Here's the article that I was actually going to read from USA Today. This is from Jorge Ortiz. Let me see the actual headline. I feel like I'm missing out on the full headline here. I can't get it off the screen. Man, I used to think that people were crazy when they would have these technical difficulties during a program, but not so much anymore. Well, let's see if we can get this off the screen here while we just go into dead air. All right, just forget it. We'll just move on to another article because I can't get this stupid mess off the screen. Here's the sub-article here. We're doing our job, Southern Poverty Law Center, discussing Proud Boys founder Gavin McGinnis. So we're doing our job. Basically, the premise of this article, we're doing our job. Southern Poverty Law Center sued by Proud Boys founder Gavin McGinnis. Thank you for the screen actually behaving as it should. So this is Jorge Ortiz, USA Today. And this article basically goes on to say Proud Boys founder Gavin McGinnis rejects the notion he's a hate monger, and he's going after the organization that believes He fits that description. McGinnis has filed a defamation lawsuit against the Southern Poverty Law Center, which has designated the Proud Boys as a hate group. The suit claims the label has cost McGinnis business opportunities and access to media platforms. Well, of course it has. And of course, the Southern Poverty Law Center, the George Soros heavily funded Southern Poverty Law Center, which, again, I've said this before, has nothing to do with the South, has nothing to do with poverty, and absolutely nothing to do with law. The Southern Poverty Law Center is basically just a left-wing strong-arm propaganda group that is pretty much just for touting anyone that actually is right of Mao as a hate group. That's pretty much the bread and butter of the Southern Poverty Law Center. I apologize again for the issues there with the stuff that wouldn't get off the screen. I hate those pop-up things. I hate them. I don't know what's going on. Everything you click on, and I get it. You got to generate revenue, but you also need to actually see the information. Nonetheless, yeah, Southern Poverty Law Center, we know what you are. So, anyone that doesn't know what they are, please look into it. George Soros heavily funded. They pretty much just go after any group that has any inkling of being conservative. And on the opposite side of that fence, any other group that's a communist-supported group, that's okay. It's just perfectly fine. This one's coming from the Charlotte Observer. Calling it the new norm, feds arrest 200 undocumented immigrants in North Carolina this week. After North Carolina's largest counties cut ties with immigration and customs enforcement, the agency said it's been forced to adopt a new normal, one that resulted in the arrest of hundreds of immigrants living here illegally this week. So, actually, I posted on this on Twitter because I was astonished, taken aback. I couldn't believe North Carolina would do anything this smart. And then I really read, and it was the feds. It wasn't our state of idiots, of course. They're mostly communist. So, yeah, North Carolina, no thanks to you. But the feds took out 200 folks living here illegally. Undocumented workers, dreamers, immigrants, whatever spin word you want to put on illegal immigrant. That's what they are. So good move for the feds for taking these folks and deporting them. Or it doesn't say that. It just says, let me see. I've missed my own word here. Arrest. They're not deported yet. Thank you. So not deported yet. They're arrested. Maybe they will be. Maybe they won't. We hope they will be deported and sent back to their country of origin. Again, legal immigration, great. Illegal immigration, not so much. And again, none of this illegal immigration would be occurring if they weren't getting so many goodies for free. So perhaps stop giving away the goodies and we'll see a sharp decline in that. Let's move on. More stupidity from the formerly great states of North Carolina. This is coming from the Washington Times. Who's the author of this piece? Stephen Dinan. The article is entitled, North Carolina Election Official Sentenced for Urging Mexican Citizen to Vote in the U.S. So I can't believe this one either. Federal prosecutors won a 2-month prison sentence this week against a North Carolina elections official who pushed a Mexican citizen to register and vote in the 2016 election. Can't believe it, North Carolina. You actually got something right this time. And this is my question as always. Okay, this is one clown, one communist clown that's gotten caught. And what, he gets a whopping, what did it say there? 2-month prison sentence. Well, whoop-de-doo. So how many other persons like this clown do we have in North Carolina and in the other states that are allowing this kind of tomfoolery? Not just allowing it, for Pete's sakes. They're encouraging it. That's what he was arrested for and charged and finally sentenced. So kind of makes you wonder, doesn't it, how we've lost so many states, so many seats in Congress the last election, and so many people doing absolutely nothing. That's the real problem. Anyway, we got all kinds of other goodies coming at you. This one's from The Sun. This article is entitled Mutant Mice by Patrick Knox. And I know somebody, as I'm reading this, is going, man, you're really hitting this abortion thing pretty hard the last few days. Yeah, true. I should be. Everyone should be. It's because it's so prevalent in the news. And I think this is another thing that most people just let slip under the rug and off the radar. And they, oh, well, abortion thing. Yeah, you shouldn't feel that way. You should be disgusted. Here we go with this one. Patrick Knox. Aborted babies are being used in macabre experiments in the U.S. that involve grafting dead fetus parts onto mice, which are then used to test drugs. Documents seen by Sun Online outline procedures that involve cutting out glands and livers of unborn children and then fusing them into lab rodents onto a mouse during the human experiments using stem cells. It's depicting the little mice here. Here's one of them getting injected with something. So again, this isn't anything new. I mean, they've had human chimeras. They've had human cloning and experimentation going on for a long time. That's kind of off the books. I mean, they're just now starting to roll out some of this stuff where they're saying, oh, look, we've got an ear, and it's growing on a pig, and we've got this, that, and the other. They've been doing this for a long time, folks, a long time. Because the deal is, if you're only a few percentages non-human, then none of these rules apply. So you can say that you have a specimen that is primarily human, but it still has some pig cells and so forth and so on. Okay, well, they're no longer human. So you can do all kinds of testing that you want to on them. But, I mean, this is just the mainstream media stuff. This isn't even anything that's the least bit. Well, that's sort of hard to believe. This is mainstream media. This is the Sun. This is going on in the United States. This is cutting off and splicing onto rodents. You're dismembering babies and putting their parts on rodents. That's what's going on here. Let it soak in. Again, let this mess soak in. It's difficult. It should be difficult. This is disgusting. This is America. That's what should enrage you. Moving on. Planned Parenthood. Let me see where this article's from. This is from WashingtonExaminer.com. Michael Watson. Planned Parenthood paid $6.5 million for a seat at the State of the Union. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, Democrat, California, invited Leanne Wynne, president of the Planned Parenthood Federation of America, to be one of her guests at the State of the Union address. Isn't that nice, Nancy? Good work there, Nance. Wynne's seat was not cheap. Affiliates of her organization spent millions to support Pelosi's quest for the majority in the House of Representatives and the ultimately unsuccessful efforts by Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, Democrat, New York, to retake the Senate. So here again, I mean, we got 6.5 mil for a seat. These are the same clowns. These are the same communist scum that are complaining about not having enough monies for a wall. The same scum. Planned Parenthood is getting federal funds. It's getting taxpayer money. 6.5 mil for a seat. Is this disturbing anyone yet? Is anyone mad? I mean, we got vets in the street. We got vets with, in my opinion, some of the worst health care imaginable. We got all this going on right here in the U.S. 6.5 mil for a seat. Moving on. Planned Parenthood again. I know, somebody's getting ticked off because I keep talking about this. Good. Be mad. This comes from LifeSiteNews.com. Calvin Friedberger. Planned Parenthood aborted. This is difficult to read. 332,757 babies last year. They received, the article says got, I'm cleaning up, got 563.8 million from taxpayers. 563.8 million from taxpayers. Soak it in. January 21st, 2019, Planned Parenthood released the latest edition of its annual report this weekend, which reveals the abortion giant's legitimate medical services continue to decline as it commits more abortions, reaps more profits, and even brings in more state and federal dollars. This is Planned Parenthood. These are the same clowns, the same scumbag murderers in 2014 that were revealed on tape, on numerous tapes, to be brokering baby parts. This is them. Yeah. This is how many abortions per year. This is how much they received. Okay? Soak it in. Get mad. Please. Do something. Just a little bit. Something. Not violence. Not talking about that. Talking about getting off your behind and doing a little something, something. Spreading the word. Get out in the streets with a sign. Get angry. Share this kind of information with your friends. This is disgusting, man. Moving on. Oh, boy. You knew North Carolina was coming back in. You knew it was. This is coming from 22 News. WWLP.com. 10-year-old Cub Scout kneels during Pledge of Allegiance from Amy Cutler. Durham, North Carolina, a notorious hive of communist scum, WNCN, is it taking a stand or disrespecting the flag? That is the question some are asking after a Durham 10-year-old took a knee during the Pledge of Allegiance on Monday night's city council meeting. Video of the meeting shows, I don't know if we want to put his name in there, we'll just move on, the child. Dropped down. The city council had invited Cub Scout Pack 451 to lead the pledge. Child said he is a Cub Scout. What I did was took a knee against racial discrimination, which is basically when people are mean to other people of different colors, said this child. I'm sure it's fine to leave the child's name in there. I'm just doing him a favor and everyone else by leaving his name out. So here we are again. We're in Durham, North Carolina, where this is taking place, a notorious hive of communist scum, which is sad. It's the epic research triangle where you've got Carolina State and Duke all right there in the proverbial tobacco road of North Carolina. And, you know, in that few square miles, you got all kinds of PhD action. You got all kinds of smart people, but you also have a whole lot of, well, you know, communist scum. I don't blame this kid. This is a 10-year-old child. I'm not getting curt with this child. I mean, this child's been indoctrinated. He's been brainwashed. He's gotten the K-12 indoctrination. He's well on his way to the weaponization at university. So you got to blame the schools. You got to blame the parents. That's not even the big thing here, you know. When it comes right down to it, he's got that freedom if he wants to do that. That's his deal. I'm just not saying it's right. I'm not really saying it's newsworthy. I'd say this kid's a victim. And sadly, it's just going to precipitate on down to more and more social justice warrior actions and Antifa and all this mess as this youngster gets older. So, yeah. Let's move on. It gets even more dumb on this one. Mayor praises 10-year-old Cub Scout for kneeling during Pledge of Allegiance. This is a separate article. I just thought I would include it because it piggybacks quite nicely. This is coming from Warren Todd Houston. The site's showing up on Breitbart's site. The mayor of Durham, North Carolina, praised a 10-year-old Cub Scout for taking a knee during the Pledge of Allegiance at the recent city council meeting. Here we go on down. We've already hit most of this. It's basically a very short article just encapsulating that this gets the mayor's approval. So isn't that great? The child's father planned the display ahead of the events and told local CBS affiliates that he was not sure if the boy would follow through with the act after they discussed it ahead of time. So here we are, folks. This isn't just this one little 10-year-old boy doing this on his own accord. No. It sounds to me like the father put him up to the shenanigans. And it even says right here, and told the local CBS affiliate that he was not sure if the boy would follow through with it. The child's father, underscore this, planned the display ahead of the event and told CBS. So, like so many things, Antifa, Black Lives Matter, all this other bollocks, this is all planned and orchestrated events. It's not a grassroots thing. It's not this one random little 10-year-old boy who happened to go to a Cub Scout meeting and say, hey, I'm going to take a knee. No. Planned, orchestrated events by the dad, if nothing else, to get some publicity and get his child on the news, on mainstream news, on big-time news. You know, I mean, this isn't just in the Raleigh-Durham area. Let's move on. I can't keep reading this mess. I mean, it's unfortunate that this child... I'm just going to leave it at that. Here we go. Moving on to a different article here. This is coming from 1.cbn.com from Steve Warren. Anti-Christian discrimination. Couple barred from foster parenting because they won't deny the Bible. Well, that sounds fine. Sounds reasonable, right? A human rights law firm in Canada is accusing a government adoption agency of discriminating against a Christian couple who wanted to become foster parents. During an interview at the adoption agency, a social worker asked the couple questions regarding their religious beliefs. Well, that's fine. Including whether his church still believes in some of the more outdated parts of the Bible. Oh, I see. Outdated parts of the Bible. That's code for parts that do not fit your communist agenda. My words. According to a press release from the Justice Center of Constitutional Freedom. And it goes on. It's like 3 or 4 pages here. I'm just giving you the broad strokes. So basically, you know, it's perfectly fine. I'm sure if the couple would have said, oh, no, we're devout Muslims, that would have been fine. Because there's no outdated parts of the Quran. Nah. See, it's only problematic if you believe in the Lord Jesus Christ. That's where it's at. It's only problematic if you believe in God. If you were to claim allegiance to someone else, totally all right. You got to wonder, folks. You got to wonder why. Why this Christianity thing scares the global communists so much, and why they recoil, you know, like a vampire at a crucifix. Anytime someone brings this stuff up, they just recoil instantly. You gotta wonder. You gotta wonder why. Let's move on. Quickly. New Mexico governor pulls National Guard troops from the border. This is coming from Associated Press. This article was actually on yourbasin.com out of Texas. This is from Morgan Lee. The governor of New Mexico ordered the withdrawal of the majority of the state's National Guard troops from the U.S. border with Mexico on Tuesday in a move that challenges President Trump's description of a security crisis. Governor Michelle Grissom. So I got to ask, in my humble opinion, you should withdraw all federal funds from New Mexico. I would withdraw, of course, if I were president, I would withdraw every single dime from the federal funds from New Mexico, and I would put an armed, not National Guard, just regular old military on the border. Let's move on. It's getting good now. It's getting real good, right? Miami Herald. This is coming from Julie Brown. Justice Department opens probe into Jeffrey Epstein's plea deal. Imagine that. The Department of Justice has opened an investigation into Secretary of Labor Alex Acosta's role in negotiating a controversial plea deal with a wealthy New York investor accused of molesting more than 100. One more time. 100 accused of molesting more than 100 girls in Palm Beach. So this is Jeffrey Epstein, folks. I've mentioned him a few times, and I'm sure many of you have not bothered to look into this. This is the wonderful Lolita Express that's going to Jeffrey Epstein's private island. This clown's a billionaire. This piece of globalist filth. So, you know, he's got connections to all kinds of Hollywood elites. He's got the Bill Clinton connections. And this is just one incident here where he's got over 100 alleged charges here. But still we sit, right? Still we're sitting by, doing nothing. Anyway, at least they're reopening this because, you know, he took the plea deal, in which he basically got nothing because he's a billionaire. Well, more likely, not just because he's a billionaire, because he has connections to the Clintons and others. Let's move on. Breitbart again. CT Democrat introduces 50% tax on ammunition. Awar Hawkins. Gilchrist is willing to exempt police and military from the imposed, but homeowners worried about defending their lives and those of their families get no such break. In fact, Gilchrist questions how much ammunition a homeowner needs to carry out a viable defense. Here we go again with this same old narrative of dung, where they're saying the Second Amendment is just for protection against invaders from your home. No. Or the other fun card, it's protection against robbery or invaders, and it's just for hunting. No. Not true. Second Amendment is for protection against a tyrannical government. See? Shall not be infringed. The right to keep and bear arms. Shall not be infringed. Bottom line, it doesn't classify any sort of firearms. It doesn't rule out any amount of ammunition. No, just says shall not be infringed. Bottom line, and this Connecticut thing's nothing more than a gun grab. That's all it is. So they're trying to, if they can't take the guns, prevent people from having any ammunition to fire said guns. That's all this is. That's all it is. Oh, I don't think we have too much time for much more of this. Here's another one. Again, New Mexico House passes bill to legalize abortions up to birth. Remember last week when I discussed New York, and then we discussed Virginia, and then we threw out there, oh, well, Rhode Island's about to do it too, and now New Mexico's done it. This is all normalization. This is all a rollout for population control and for killing children. That's what this is. This is nothing more, nothing less. No clump of cells. We're talking until birth here. And after that, they're going to roll out the post-birth abortions. They're going to say, well, you know, you should probably have like a six-month grace period, and you might want to kill little Bobby if he's being too problematic in the night, you know, 2 or 3 weeks into his life outside of the womb. That should be allowed too, right? And you'll get the usual suspect communist trash going, well, I guess that's how it is. Right? So that's where we're at. We're at the incrementalization process. That's all this is. Nothing more, nothing less. Please don't mistake it for anything other than what it is. I will close on this. We got a whole stack of articles here, but I'm just going to try to keep it more concise here. This is coming from Natural News by none other than Mike Adams. Alert. Twitter blocks all Natural News / Health Ranger channels after Adams comments on the Jack Dorsey / Joe Rogan Bitcoin fraud. So, all animals are free, but some are more free than others. Right? Edward Blair? Right? So, I mean, this is just more of what we're seeing precipitate down. I mean, first you saw a few different news channels being blocked and censored from Twitter. Then you saw their payment processors being taken away. Then you saw their commenting options being taken away. And a lot of people were going, oh, well, it's just one or two people. Yeah, first they came for the blank, and then they went to the blank, right? So that's kind of where we're at now. And the more people just sit by and do absolutely nothing, the more this will continue. And that's what's going on now. You know, like 3 or 4 months ago, it was just a couple of broadcasters. Nobody seemed to give a rat's. And it's gone on down the rabbit hole. Until now we're seeing more and more people. You know, they're stacking them up like firewood. These people that are no longer allowed on social media, that are banned from certain payment processors. The whole thing is they're going to set up the China-style censorship boards here. I mean, Dorsey and Facebook and the other criminals are the people that have done this in China, and their end game is to do the same thing here. So you won't be allowed to say certain things. You won't even be allowed on the internet. That's the game plan. That's what's up. That's where we're going with this whole thing. So as long as good men and women do nothing, what's going to happen? Yeah, you know the quote, right? All that it takes for tyranny to flourish is for good men and women to do nothing. And I would say that the good men and women in the United States have done their fair share and then some of nothing. So we've seen tyranny flourish and continue to flourish. It's out of control right now. You know, I mean, I thought it was pretty bad during the Obama regime, and it was dreadful. And it would have been, you know, by volumes worse under Hillary. And I'm not saying none of this is Trump's fault. I'm putting the onus on this where I always place it, with the people of the country, the citizenry of the United States. He's one guy. He can't do it all. I mean, sure, he can make all kinds of decrees and sign all sorts of executive orders and so forth and so on. But at some point, the people have to stand up for themselves. Yeah. At some point, the baby has to learn to walk. The bird has to fly off from the nest. And the people are continuing to allow this to occur. I won't belabor these points. I think we all get it. Let's get into the bio of our guest coming up in just a moment. Michael De Leon. Michael R. De Leon, a successful, acclimated ex-offender who, after nearly 8 years of drug addiction and gang involvement, spent 12 years in state prison and halfway houses for a gang-related homicide. Since Michael's release from prison, he's earned 3 associate degrees, a bachelor's degree in business management with a minor in criminal justice, and a CADC educational certificate. Michael is now in the process of obtaining a master's degree in addictions counseling at Liberty University, as well as pursuing his LCADC. Michael is the founder of Steered Straight, Inc., a nonprofit organization formed in 2000, designed with the intention of carrying a prevention message to youth and young adults regarding the extreme dangers of drugs, gang involvement, and criminal activity. Michael spends his time developing Steered Straight by stressing the importance of young men and women making sound, rational decisions in their day-to-day lives. Michael has spoken to over 7 million students and young adults as a motivational speaker in many facilities, delivering evidence-based student programs around the country. He has presented in centers and schools in 48 states thus far. Michael is also an award-winning filmmaker and has directed and produced 4 documentaries on addiction, focusing on the opiate and heroin epidemic in America, marijuana legalization, and addiction recovery. His memoir, Chasing Detours, will be released in 2018. That's already occurred. There are numerous other films and book projects underway. So, just from this condensed version of his bio, to be honest, I cut a whole lot out. And I'll put the full Monty on the webpage, anomicage.com, under his guest information Well, this is probably a quarter of his bio. He definitely brings a whole lot to the table as someone that knows this from living it. And definitely can speak to this because I think a lot of people have the perception that folks that get involved in this sort of activity perhaps are predisposed to doing that because of where they live or their socioeconomic status and so forth. He'll definitely dispel that and put that to rest with our conversation today. So please check out steeredstraight.org for all things Michael De Leon. You can see ways to check out his films and documentaries there. You can look at all the different things he's done and brought to the table. He's got some other guests' material on there, radio shows, all his media information. And, of course, if you're so inclined, how to contact him to speak to your school or group of young people as well. So we'll take a brief pause, and we will catch up with Michael De Leon on the other side. Thank you for joining me on The Anomic Age, and stay tuned for the rest of the show. See you in a second. All right, we are proud to welcome into The Anomic Age today Michael De Leon. Michael speaks and presents to youth, parents, educators, law enforcement, medical professionals, and community groups throughout the country. He presents to in excess of 1.5 million people each year. He created two additional educational arms of Steered Straight, Recovery Arm, and Faithing Addiction, both of which target specific audiences throughout America to educate and prevent addiction and build and support recovery. His site is steeredstraight.org for all things Michael De Leon. Welcome to the program, sir. I'm happy to have you on.
Thanks. Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. No problem.
I know it hasn't been easy getting together. So, 7 days a week, I'm either speaking in a school or a jail or a prison treatment center across the country. I'm doing family or community events, law enforcement conferences, medical conferences, doing everything I can to basically try to stop this pandemic of addiction that we have affecting our country.
That sounds amazing. I'm excited just to have you on and to talk about this problem because it's one of those problems I think a lot of people kind of sweep under the rug, or they believe it's a certain demographic or a certain group only that this affects, but definitely not the case.
Yeah, it's easy to ignore it. I mean, it's easier to not talk about it, not face it. It's uncomfortable. It's for some people shameful, and you know, people use the word stigma. I really hate that word, but for lack of a better word, you know, that there's some stigma to talking about addiction and even stigma talking about recovery.
Yeah.
But the not talking about something's not going to make it go away. And that's really my life mission is to really educate people on what's taking place, what's happening. And if we don't talk about it, we're not going to solve the problem. So
that's the truth. For those who haven't heard your story, give us as much as you want to give us, I suppose. Because I know a lot of folks, this is their first time getting acquainted with you and what you're about and your website and your films and documentaries. We have so much to talk about.
So, you want my whole story?
Well, not the whole story, perhaps. I guess as much as you want to give us. I know, you know, you faced addiction, you faced incarceration, you've had a rich life, to say the least.
Yeah, I used to be rich too, but I destroyed that. So, I mean, in America, we're dealing with an addiction pandemic. It's the worst public social health crisis our country's ever seen, and it's going to get worse. But you can't address the drugs. When I say we're in an addiction pandemic, I also say drugs aren't the problem. They become the problem. They are a problem, but they're not the problem. And as long as we're not addressing the underlying problem, we're not going to ever solve it. And so we also can't address this problem, solve this problem in piecemeal, meaning this organization does this, this organization does this, this person does that, this person does that. We have to work together. We also can't just talk to kids about drugs. A lot of people want to go talk to kids about drugs, and we can't. We have to talk to every facet of the community about all of the related issues, scenarios, topics, content that relates to this problem, including drugs. But drugs aren't the problem. My problem stemmed much earlier in childhood trauma and sexual abuse for 3 years by a pedophile priest in our Catholic church, and the guilt that followed that because not speaking up, my mom allowing the church to kind of sweep it under the rug and move that priest away. And he went on to abuse 54 more boys in 25 years in Pennsylvania. I testified for the Pennsylvania Attorney General. I'm sure you heard, most people heard about the over 300 pedophile priests that abused boys over 30 years in Pennsylvania. And he was one of those priests. So I never dealt with that. It was childhood trauma, to say the least. ACEs, a lot of people might be familiar with, ACES, Adverse Childhood Experiences. And that was definitely an adverse childhood experience. So that's just the core of my problem, the trauma that I never dealt with. And drugs became the easy, brief, reprieve from the pain, the guilt, the shame, and the anger, the bitter, the resentment, and the hate. I hated the Catholic Church, hated priests, and worst of all, I hated myself. So I really don't always start with that, don't always bring that up right away, but I was at three schools today, and three schools yesterday in upstate New York, New Jersey today, and I had probably a total of 25 kids in all six schools, at least 25 today and yesterday, who came up to me and talked to me after a 90-minute presentation about drugs, okay? But they addressed the little tidbits of stuff that's shared throughout the presentation that relates to the drugs. And maybe two of the 25 talked about drugs, their use of drugs. At least 7-10 of them talked about parental use of drugs. Their parent overdosed on heroin, their dad's in prison for heroin, their mom's in prison for heroin. But a good 12 to 15 of these kids talked about their own sexual abuse. And people say, why do kids use drugs? And there's really only three reasons. Everyone's talking about this complex issue, this complicated issue, and it is complicated because we make it complicated. But when you get right down to the core of why kids use drugs, why they say yes instead of saying no, it comes down to three reasons. Number one is physiological. We prescribe the wrong medication. We overprescribe a medication. We misdiagnose. We misprescribe a medication. We doctors in America do not find out based on a pharmacogenetic basis what drug is the right drug for that body, that person, right? We just prescribe trial and error prescribing. You go to the doctor, he diagnoses you, or you're diagnosed, the kid is diagnosed by a school psychologist, and you go to the pediatrician says, oh, ADHD here,
yeah.
Ritalin, we'll see how that works for 30 days. And it doesn't work, it makes it worse. Okay, we'll try Concerta for 30 days. It doesn't work, it makes it worse. We'll try Adderall for 30 days. And we keep throwing darts at a kid until one sticks. And it's called trial and error prescribing in America. And that entry, that first entry into addiction is physiological. That's easily remedied. And we don't do it in America. And I want to try to figure out a way to get every doctor to do it. But outside of that, there's two reasons why kids say yes to drugs. And they're internalizing and externalizing. A lot of people think peer pressure. When I ask the question, one of the biggest answers I get right away is peer pressure. Other kids pressuring kids to use drugs. Okay. That's external. So peer pressure means social norms. It means, fitting in. It means we haven't properly prepared our middle school child to go to a high school party and role play with them before they got there of what they would say or do if someone offered them a red Solo cup, right? So we hope they're going to say no. We all wish our children are going to say no, but then they get there and they don't say no. Wonder why? Because we haven't trained them. We said, just say no. But we didn't teach them how to say no, why to say no, and we didn't show them what to say yes to. And we didn't show them what saying no means to yes in their life. And we haven't role played with them. So this is what I teach parents all across the country based on my failures. And I don't blame my parents. They just didn't know any better. And most parents don't know any better. We just live by this fake, you know, delusion that we tell ourselves that it's not going to be our kid until it's our kid. And then we're like, how did this happen? And then we're saying so shameful and stigmatized that we don't talk about it. And the problem flourishes. So externalizing, sensation seeking, fitting in, getting along with other people, being part of the in crowd, being cool, externalizing. And then internalizing, which was my gateway, internalizing, self-medicating, letting the anger go away, letting the pain go away, quieting the noise in my head, externalizing and internalizing. And both are different and both have to be treated different. So a lot of people say they want to go to schools and talk to kids about drugs. And they get up in front of their audience and they tell their story. And then they leave. Failure, complete waste of time, waste of money. Makes these speakers feel good so they can post on Facebook that they talk to kids. Ooh, I'm making a difference. But in reality, you're making it worse because kids don't need a story. You're taking them away from learning time and you're not really teaching and educating. So telling a story is a waste of time. We have to teach a story. And then we have to give kids continuing education. And then if we educate kids about drugs, but we don't educate parents, we don't educate the business community, we don't educate the faith-based community, we don't teach law enforcement and the medical community about addiction, I don't care how much we teach kids, we're never going to solve this problem. So I'm trying to incorporate everything, and it's a holistic approach to solving this pandemic. But too many people are in their little silos, and they want to do this and they want to do that, and they feel comfortable with what they're doing. And, you know, I see a lot of people having vigils and balloon launches and let's have recovery events, and the treatment industry is a disaster. And the medical community is getting worse. And the black market of illicit drugs is getting worse. And we're stimulating adolescent brains with these little devices, right?
Oh, yeah.
So we've wired the brain in an age of technology. And we're doing less and less and less educating kids on the real things that matter, which is self-worth and self-value and empowerment and being in charge of your destiny and, you know, not letting events in your life determine the outcome of your life, teaching kids that it's their response to those events that determines the outcome of their life. And then we've got a whole population of people that are in addiction. They're addicted to drugs, they're alcoholic, and we're not really addressing them the right way. And those people, 70% of them have children, okay? So it's like a circus. And I don't know, sometimes I feel like I'm a candle in the wind. Sometimes I feel I'm not making that much of a difference, but you know, it's funny today. It's been two full 24-hour days without any sleep. I had to drive 8 hours between days and drive 8 hours back, so I haven't been on email. And so my wife just shared with me three emails that came in from kids yesterday, and one of them was so touching I started crying. And it's those things that give me fuel for tomorrow, you know, that I actually am making a difference. And I see it. I see it here and here and here and here and here. I want to see it everywhere, you know. And I'm nothing special. I just have a gift, and I'm 12 years into this advocacy and this outreach and this prevention. And I have 25 years of drug and crime and gang and prison experience. I know what I'm talking about. I went to prison, as you mentioned earlier, for 12 years. And I got out of prison in 2007. And my best friend lost his 22-year-old daughter to a heroin overdose.
Oh, man.
She was 22. 22, and she was a third-year student at Drexel University in Pennsylvania, and she was a straight-A student. And I know a lot about addiction, but I couldn't wrap my head around the fact that a 22-year-old girl in her third year at Drexel, one of the best colleges in America, overdosed and died on heroin. And I'll tell you, this girl had every protective factor you could have as a kid. She graduated one of the top 10% of her class in high school. She participated in every extracurricular activity you could have, two-parent households. She wasn't the one that was supposed to die of a heroin overdose. So it made me want to go back to become a drug counselor. So I went back to my community college, and I became a drug counselor. And I had 26 kids on my caseload. I saw each kid for an hour a week. I would see each one for 1 hour, each client for 1 hour. And January 10th to January 20th, 2012, I lost four kids on my caseload within 10 days of each other.
Man.
I lost an 18-year-old girl named Ashley, a 19-year-old boy named Mark, a 22-year-old girl named Samantha, and a 23-year-old boy named Brandon. So four kids dead within 10 days of each other. And trust me when I tell you, it was very hard to go through. I actually quit counseling. I literally went into the woman who was supervising my hours, and I told her that I had to quit, that I wouldn't be able to – I just wouldn't be able to do what she does. So I quit, and I walked away from counseling. And I decided that I wanted to do something on a much bigger scale. I wanted to do something to scale. You know, I hate that expression. People are watching a newscast or they read an article in the paper and it's something terrible. And they sit there and they say, someone should do something about this.
Yeah. And they look around the room like, who's going to do it?
Yeah. Where are you looking? Go in your bathroom and look in the mirror.
Yeah. Pull the mirror off the wall if you need to.
Here's someone. Someone should do something about this. You're damn right. You are someone. So do something, right?
Yeah.
And so I decided to go to a little city in New Jersey called Camden, New Jersey. If you don't know anything about Camden, New Jersey, just Google it. It's the bowels of the earth, right?
Yeah. I heard about it a while ago. I didn't even know what it was. And I read Days of Destruction, Days of Revolt, like a book that chronicled different sections, and that was startling.
Yeah, very great book. Camden, New Jersey was the wealthiest city in America. It's now the poorest city in America. It went from the wealthiest city to the poorest city. It's gang-infested, drug-infested, poverty-stricken. It's horrible, horrible, horrible city. And ironically, the most beautiful people in the world live there. It's sad, but these people are all beautiful people, and I try to do, you know, what I can there. I used to do a lot of advocacy work there before I started counseling kids, but now I'm all over the world, and I just don't have the time to go to Camden. But I go there every time I land in Philly. I go right to Camden. Wherever I'm going, I go through Camden on my way and see if I see an addict on the street that I recognize, or a girl selling herself that I could get a bag out of my trunk with socks and panties and toothbrush and toothpaste and shampoo and conditioner and a little card that says, if you want detox or treatment, call me up, right? And, you know, none of these people have insurance. I have to fight like hell and work hard to help them get somewhere on their Medicaid. And most of them don't even have Medicaid. So I have to work really hard to get them into a treatment bed. But anyway, most of them don't want help. Most of them just don't want help. A lot of them are on methadone in the clinic there. And they really don't want help. So, but I never know who's going to want help. So I try to help everybody.
Be there when you can.
Yep. So all four of the kids that died on my caseload, and Amber, the girl who died that kind of started my whole mission, they all bought their fentanyl-laced heroin in Camden. So I decided I was going to go do a documentary about it. And I spent 10 months on the streets of Camden. I interviewed 137 homeless heroin addicts on the streets of Camden over 10 months. And 121 of the 137 abused opioid pain medication prior to finding themselves on heroin. Some dentist or some doctor prescribed them all this opioid medication. and they became addicted to it. Now, not everybody that gets pain medication becomes a heroin addict, and not every heroin addict begins on opioid medication, just 3 out of 4. I found out in my 10 months of filming that in New Jersey, in Camden, it was a little higher. It was 88%. 121 out of 137 found themselves on heroin after becoming addicted to opioid medication. But 100% of the 137 kids had 3 things in common. Every single one of them smoked cigarettes or they vaped. 100% of them smoked marijuana. And 100% of them used alcohol under the age of 16. I call it the trifecta gateway. I know the word gateway is so divisive.
Oh,
for
yeah, nobody wants to admit that.
Marijuana, alcohol, and nicotine. And when I say marijuana, I mean THC, the molecule in marijuana that's psychoactive, that gets you high. THC, nicotine, and alcohol is a trifecta gateway. And in all my years of experience interviewing thousands of addicts, interviewing thousands of prisoners, my own experience, putting people into treatment, over 7,000 people into treatment in the last 12 years, 90% of addiction begins between the ages of 10 and 18, and 90% of addiction begins with 3 drugs, alcohol, nicotine, and THC. So I made a documentary. I didn't really know how to make a documentary. I learned how to do it on YouTube. And I knew how to videography. I knew how to video edit. I knew how to tell a story. So what I didn't know, I learned on YouTube, and I made a film, a little documentary called Kids Are Dying. And it came out in the beginning of 2013. You know, I was looking the other day and someone was talking about 2 new documentaries that are coming out on heroin. And I'm like, wow, I did that 7 years ago. Where were you then?
Yeah, where was the major coverage?
I mean, with all due respect, you know, I saw a father post on Facebook the other day, his son's obituary, and It was heartfelt. It really was. And he was not shy, didn't hold anything back. He said his son, 19-year-old son, died of a heroin overdose, and he wanted people to know how serious this was. And I'm thinking, where were you 10 years ago when I've been screaming about this? He was one of those guys who came to my presentation out of school, and he said, yeah, it's not going to be my kid. It's not going to be my kid. Well, it turned out it was your kid. It's never going to be your kid until it's your kid. And this problem, listen, we're in the beginning of this, the very beginning of this pandemic. This pandemic is going to peak in the late 20s and early 2030, and we're going to be losing 250 to 300,000 Americans a year directly to a drug overdose. And people
scary.
Just don't get it.
That's terrifying.
It's very scary. Very scary. And then nicotine is going to kill over 1 million a year in America. Over 1 million a year will die to nicotine. And the nicotine is going to be manifested through respiratory disorders. Right now, 593,000 Americans died last year from cigarette smoking. Well, the electronic devices are going to kill over 1 million a year, and it's going to be from COPD and CLRD and respiratory disorders and acute respiratory syndrome. Because we're creating that problem right now with 10 to 18-year-old children because we're flavoring all these electronic devices and we're telling kids that this is no big deal and they believe it. A lot of people don't realize 2018, the liquor moratorium just ended in America. So you just witnessed the first Super Bowl commercial for liquor. Jack Daniels had a great commercial on the Super Bowl. Watch what happens and mark my words. The alcohol moratorium is over because the liquor lobby just bought Congress last year to make sure that it wasn't reinstated. So now we're going to be advertising liquor, poured liquor, right on television. And guess who watches a lot of television?
Yeah.
Kids. So, and the liquor industry is making sure. I just saw an article the other day. It said vaping among teens is on the rise while other drug use like alcohol is declining. And I go, listen, I don't know who, I don't know what school you went to do a survey at, but you're completely wrong. But much of that erroneous information is driven by the liquor industry. The alcohol industry wants people to believe the kids are drinking less. So we take our eyes off of it. Kind of like we did with drugs when bullying became the most popular issue to talk about in America, right? Bullying. Yeah, it's an issue. Drugs are killing
people. But it's not killing people.
Right. So I made a documentary called Kids Are Dying, and it came out in 2013, the end of 2012, the beginning of 2013. And I said, you know, I don't believe that this problem is Camden and Philadelphia and Kensington, Pennsylvania. I believe this problem is nationwide. So I got in my car and I took off and I went across the country and I visited 30 states and I interviewed 500 parents who buried their kids. 500. 500 parents who lost their children to an overdose of drugs. Youngest one was a seventh grader. And I asked every parent, including the parents of the seventh grader, did your kids smoke or vape? Including the seventh grader. Yes, the seventh grader vaped. Did they drink alcohol underage? Yes, including the seventh grader. Did they smoke weed? Yes, 500 for 500. The trifecta gateway strikes again. So I put out a movie called An American Epidemic, that it was an epidemic. You could see the movie on YouTube. And I found myself in Boulder, Colorado, with a woman who buried her daughter the night before graduation. She died of a heroin overdose the night before she walked across the stage at the University of Colorado at Boulder. And so I wanted to clear my head. It was a tough interview. So I was walking down the city streets of Boulder, and I came across a marijuana dispensary. And so I went inside to check it out, and I thought I was in Nordstrom's. I thought I'd walked into the, you know, the Clinique counter at Macy's. It was the chicest boutique I've ever seen, and they were selling things that I'd never seen before, and they were calling it marijuana. So I spent a year in Colorado interviewing over 500 people, and I made a documentary movie called Marijuana X. Marijuana X. The reason I call it X is because it's not marijuana anymore. So I spent the year 2014 and 15 on the streets of Colorado, Denver, Pueblo, Fort Collins, Castle Rock, Colorado Springs, Breckenridge. I went everywhere I could to interview and talk to people. Lived under a bridge in Pueblo. I stayed in the Salvation Army in Denver for 3 weeks. I went all in. And I spent a lot of money. I'm broke now. These films have put me in the poorhouse. That's why we just moved from New Jersey to Tennessee to cut our expenses in half. But I made a movie called Marijuana X, and it really showed what was happening with marijuana legalization. And so I was 100% zealous. We can't legalize marijuana. And since that movie's come out, I've pulled back a little bit because I can't fight a fight that's unwinnable. And I can't fight the marijuana legalization fight. That is a fight no one can win. What I want to do is protect kids and then give adults informed information so it becomes education so they can then make informed choices, because there's going to be some people that are not going to listen. Some people are going to die. Some people are going to die. And there's an old expression people don't like. Some have to die for others to live. I don't want them to die. I don't want anybody to die. But some are going to die, and some are going to capitalize on the death. So I just want to prevent the early premature death of as many people as possible. And so I want to educate adults on marijuana, but I can't fight the legalization anymore. But all I'm doing is fighting for kids. I'm fighting for kids. So along the way of these three addiction movies, I found a lot of people in recovery from addiction, like myself, and I wanted to find out how they found recovery and how they were living in recovery and how they were staying off drugs and alcohol. And so I made a movie called On the Road to Recovery, and I have a website called recoveryarmy.com, which is also on steeredstraight.org. And I put stories of recovery up there. There's over 150, 180 now, of hope. People who have hope that have found a new way of life, and they've given good advice to people who are seeking that path. So I'm a quasi-filmmaker. I got four more projects in production right now, four. And I have about 362 projects that are in here that I want to get out. So I have a lot of ideas, things I want to do, and I'm disheartened so much because people aren't working together. And the pharmaceutical industry is trying to capitalize on every facet of this. They want to give America chemical solutions to spiritual problems. And it just doesn't work that way. So I did 616 schools last year. I did over 150 prisons. I visited 100 treatment centers. I worked 7 days a week, 365 days a year. As you know, we were supposed to talk hours ago. I had another overdose call right when I was supposed to start talking to you. I did three schools today, three schools yesterday. I haven't slept in 2 days. And I got a whole weekend planned. So after we're done here, I'll be editing video for hours. And then I'll try to get my normal 3 hours of sleep. And then I'll be up tomorrow morning to do it all again.
That's my grief, Michael. You're making me feel like I need to be doing more, man. Good Lord, that's amazing.
Well, sorry to guilt you into feeling that way, but
I like it, man.
I hate social media. People think I'm a Facebook junkie. My wife actually calls me a Facebook junkie, but I'm not. I literally post what I'm doing every single day just to encourage people to do more. That's all I'm doing, and I really don't want to guilt you. I just want to encourage people to do more because we can all do something.
Absolutely.
And if everybody did this much, we'd solve the problem, you know? So,
I mean, one of the things that really intrigued me with you from the get-go is I guess, like, the contrast in our past, because I'm 41 and I've never done any alcohol or any drugs or anything. And my wife and I are on the same page there, and I feel like we feel like the biggest aliens in the world when we get out amongst people from most of the time, because, you know, for example, we were at a holiday party at Christmas, and it was a family friend over there, and he was letting his, I think the girl was like 16-year-old girl drink, and he was over there, so we're going to follow the European model, and I was just kind of, I rolled my eyes and kept my mouth shut, because, you know, you don't want to mess up Christmas for everybody, but I was just thinking, wow, that seems like a terrible move. I mean, I didn't call it the trifecta like you, but I definitely sort of, I've always known that trifecta that you were talking about, and I see it all the time, and I'm thinking, man, what are you doing? Like, letting your 13-year-old have a bit of wine and the vaping and everything is just so commonplace now. It's disturbing.
Yeah, and the reason I focus on those three, the trifecta, there's an outlier that's more dangerous than all of them, and it's pharmaceutical industry. It's big pharma. I call it Pharmageddon. And they've recruited the medical community to be their puppets. And I'm sorry if you are offended that I disparage the medical community.
Not at all, man.
Or not you, but anybody. I always apologize that I disparage the medical community, the pharmaceutical industry, and then I follow that apology up with tough crap.
Yeah.
You cannot dispute. I'm a 2-time cancer survivor, and I'm here because of my oncologist. Well, first of all, I'm here because of God, okay? Mm-hmm. I'm here because of my amazing redheaded wife. but I'm here because my oncologist, in his last year of oncology before he retired, I was his highest dosage chemo patient in his 40 years of cancer treatment and oncology. He almost killed me with chemo, but I was cured of cancer, right? So when I get a headache, I take it and leave, you know? I had an umbilical hernia a year ago. If I was in excruciating pain as a heroin addict, if I was in excruciating pain, guess what? I'm going to take an opioid medication. My wife is going to hand it to me. She's going to hold the prescription. She'll put it in my mouth. I'll drink it. And then if I want another one, she's going to really ask me how much pain I'm in and remind me that I'm a heroin addict, right? But I'm not stupid if I'm in pain like that. If I got into a car accident and I ended up in the hospital with broken bones, you better shoot all the morphine in the hospital into me, okay? I'm in a controlled environment, and I need a controlled substance to control my pain. But when I'm leaving the hospital, I don't want to go out with pain medication. I want it available if I'm in excruciating pain. And I was in pain, but guess what? I took some Aleve. I took 600 milligram Motrin, not even an 800 milligram Motrin, and the pain went away in a day. So, but you know, I take Alka-Seltzer plus cold medicine if I, you know, get a cold.
Oh yeah.
I'll take a Benadryl if I have a. I don't know what my food allergies are, but I have them. I carry Benadryl with me in my suitcase, and I carry Benadryl with me in my car, and I've had to take Benadryl twice in the last couple of months because I had a cheese reaction one time and I don't know what the other reaction was. I'm going to take it. The medical community and the pharmaceutical industry have a purpose, you know? Just like some people can drink alcohol responsibly. I'm not one of those people, so I don't drink alcohol, you know? But I want the pharmaceutical industry held responsible, and I wish we could take the profit out of the pharmaceutical industry. I mean, why does a pill cost, you know, $4 in Mexico and $400 in America? It's just, why are we putting people on medications for the rest of their life instead of addressing the problem? So why are we black label and off label marketing drugs without FDA approval and telling people that drugs can be taken for a plethora of reasons when they've never been studied for those reasons? So I hate pharmaceutical industry. They do more bad than good. People say they do more good than bad. I don't believe it. But
I don't either.
Alcohol industry does more bad than good. Sorry, it's fact. You know, the tobacco industry does all bad. But anyway,
that's true.
I'm trying to focus on those three drugs with the pharmaceutical outlier and prevent kids from getting started, because if we can protect the prefrontal cortex and we can keep addictive substances off the adolescent brain, we have a chance. And alcohol is a depressant, nicotine is a stimulant, and THC is a hallucinogen. So the trifecta gateway has three different, you know, effects on the adolescent brain. And so we have a big problem. So that's my life, that's my mission, that's my purpose. That's what I'm trying to do.
And one thing I know you already touched on, but was people's addictions to devices now. I mean, they've come out with study after study where it rewires your brain, and I see every parent in the world but me giving their kid the iPad, some other device, you know, just shut up and get in the car. And I'm going, man, that's not going to be good for that child at all.
It reminds me, though, back in the 80s when all these people were going crazy about violent video games, right?
Yeah.
And violent video games turned into violent people. And they couldn't, you know, correlate the two. There was some causation, but not causal factors, right? So people just kind of ignored it, and you have no idea what it really did, right? It's an absolute fact. There's a big study going on right now. It was just featured on 60 Minutes recently, that you should never put an interactive smart device, tablet, phone in the hands of any infant under the age of 3 years old and younger. And I know hundreds of parents who put
me too
put those devices in their kids' hands, and it's bad. It's very, very bad. So electronic devices on adolescents is very bad. We've rewired the brain.
Yeah, I mean, like you were saying, I've read studies that the brain isn't even fully formed until you're like 25, 21 to 25. I think there's a range or something. But, I mean, so I'm always going, so why are you giving the kid this? And then why are you giving your adolescent the booze and the e-vaping cigarettes? I think everyone thinks the e-vapes are not as harmful for some reason, but I think they're just about worse.
They are worse. It's absolutely irrefutable that they are worse. And I kind of stay away from adults and vaping. My friends, I'll tell if they want to know, but I'm not going to tell an adult what to do. Adults are adults.
Oh, yeah.
If you're not informed yourself, why should I inform you, right? I'm going to inform you because I care. But if you're not going to listen to me and you're going to argue with me, I'm going to go try to talk to the next person. But I fight for 20-year-old citizens and younger. That's my fight. I fight for kids. And I do not want kids vaping. They vape as an adolescent. They're 6 times more likely to smoke. And the tobacco industry did that 7-year study from 2002 to 2009. The thing I was talking about with 60 Minutes was in December 2018. It's all on brain hacking. Brain hacking is the hacking of the brain with electronic devices, and they recommend phones, tablets, and their impact on kids' brains, and it's very real, and now they really have the proof. So you got to be very vigilant as a parent. But my, you know, my journey to prison began with, you know, a drug addiction. I was running a multi-million-dollar corporation in Charlotte, North Carolina. It was a package delivery business. We had over 400 employees in 16 terminals in 8 states, and we were hugely successful. And I was addicted to amphetamines, speed, you know, meth and, you know, fen-phen and ephedra and Adderall. And I was, you know, I was medical problems. I was having seizures. And my best friend introduced me to cocaine because it's much safer than amphetamines.
Of course.
And he said, hey, this is all natural, man. That stuff you're taking is synthetic. That's what he said. So I snorted a lot of cocaine, and that turned into smoking cocaine, which turned into shooting it in my arm, which followed heroin going into my arm, and I lost everything. I lost my interest in my business. I lost my home. I lost everything. The only thing I didn't lose is an amazing redhead from West Virginia. And I came back to New Jersey, and within one day I was on drugs again. And I ended up in prison. And I did 5 years in prison for a crime I did not commit, but one I'm responsible for, 100% responsible for. I caused it, but I didn't do it. And I pled guilty to a murder, basically, and went to prison for 5 years. And I came out of prison after 5 years, and 10 months out of prison, I was in a violent car accident, and I had 3 cracked cervical vertebrae.
Oh, man.
I was in traction in a hospital with a broken neck, 10 months home from prison. And they said, we need to do surgery on you or you're going to be paralyzed. I said, well, let's do surgery. And they said, well, we got to set you up with a neurologist and a spinal surgeon. So they put a harness on me and a shoulder brace and a neck brace. And they sent me home to await further instructions. And I walked out of the emergency room hospital with 7 different medications. And one of those medications was an industrial-sized bottle of 360 80-milligram OxyContin. Now, I'm a recovered heroin addict at the time, and you hand me 360 80-milligram OxyContin, probably wasn't the best move of that doctor, right? Now, a lot of people, as I shared earlier about pharmacogenetic pathway to addiction, a lot of people don't understand metabolizing of drugs. I have a super high metabolizing rate for opioid medication. And so I eat and dissolve and, you know, metabolize opioids like it's water. And I ate that bottle of 360 80-oxys in 1 week.
Man.
1 week. And you know what the doctor did? He gave me another bottle, which I consumed in 1 week.
He didn't seem to pick up a problem.
My wife had me at the – well, listen, in fairness to doctors, the Sackler family, Purdue Pharma, Stamford, Connecticut, told every doctor in this country that 1% of people prescribed OxyContin would become addicted to it. So a young emergency room doctor sending a cracked cervical vertebrae patient home from the hospital probably didn't even think twice about 80-milligram OxyContin. And my poor wife was standing there crying, and he probably looked at her, and he's like, I'm not going to have this girl running back and forth to the pharmacy for pain medication. I'm not going to give 30, 60, or 90. Let me just give them the whole bottle. I'm sure he didn't expect me to eat it in 7 days, right? So after I ate the second bottle and I showed up at the hospital, I was in excruciating pain. My wife was holding me up on the gurney. I'm drooling, okay? I'm not even there mentally. I'm gone. I'm on another planet, right? She's holding me up, right? And the doctor comes in. He says, my gosh, no one's ever eaten 780-milligram OxyContin in 2 weeks. This might not be the right pain medication for your husband. My wife says, yeah. You think? Well, I walked out of that hospital that day with 21 pharmaceutical medications, 11 opioid medications, trial and error. So let's see which one works best.
Yeah, just shotgun approach.
Yeah, 3 benzodiazepines, Klonopin, Valium, and Xanax, the one I was on, and a barbiturate, Seroquel, so I could sleep, all sorts of other medication, nerve blockers and mood stabilizers and muscle relaxers, 21 pharmaceutical drugs. And within a couple of months, I hadn't gotten my surgery because every time I showed up at the hospital for surgery, I had illicit drugs in my system because I went right back to shooting cocaine. And I started doctor shopping. And I was seeing 67 doctors getting 9,000 opiates a month. So,
wow.
I ended up getting violated in probation and sent back to prison. So instead of taking a 5-year gift and moving on with my life, I turned a 5-year gift into a 12-year nightmare. I went back to prison for almost 7 more years.
Wow.
Yeah. So, you know, when I got back in prison the second time, I knew exactly what it is I wanted to do with my life. I wanted to talk to kids. I wanted to teach kids. I wanted to make sure kids didn't grow up to become me. So I started calling some principals and superintendents. Hey, I just got out of prison. I want to come talk to your kids.
Yeah.
Hello? Hello?
Must be a break in the line.
They hung up on me. I never forget the first time it happened. I called the principal and he hung up on me and I turned around. My wife was like, what? And I said, he hung up on me. She said, he did? Well, try another one. And I called another one. Good morning. I got out of prison recently. I want to come talk to your... Hello? Hello? Nobody wanted the ex-con in their schools to talk to children.
Yeah.
You know? And unfortunately, we have a lot of ignorant people in America who believe someone like me should never go to talk to kids. Yeah, ignorance is bliss, I guess, if you don't think it'll ever happen to you. I'm the one that needs to go talk to kids.
That's true.
You know, I'm not hiding my past. I don't hide my past. Go to my website, steeredstraight.org. You'll see the whole story. You know, it's a brief version because my book is coming out, and I didn't want my whole book on my website. I'm trying to raise money for this nonprofit organization, and I don't get paid to speak. I don't take money to speak. And I have this nonprofit. I'm just trying to save the world. And where I should be is in a 6x9 cell for the rest of my life, because if I got caught and convicted for everything that I did in my life, they would have buried me under the prison, you know? But God had a different plan for my life, and I know exactly what it is I want to do. I know exactly what kind of difference I want to make in the world, and I'm just desperately trying to make it. So I need help, I need support, I need encouragement, and I need people to call their schools and ask their principals and superintendents, hey, what the heck are you doing to truly educate kids about drugs? I heard about this guy from New Jersey. Now you could say Nashville because I live in Nashville now. But I heard about this guy who's got a crazy story, but he doesn't tell his story. He teaches it. And he's got a whole year-long program that complements the presentation. And he has evidence-based curriculum with educational booklets. He's given out 6 million booklets across the country in 4 years. He's really making a difference. And he has expertise on vaping and nicotine, marijuana, and alcohol. And he wants to bring that message into kids. So that's what I'm trying to do. And I need help. You know, I need help and referrals, I guess.
That's amazing, man. I'm so excited about what you're doing. Well, coming from somebody that's heard other speakers that are not like you, you know, growing up, I think it was when I was a kid, Gregory Hines came to my middle school or something, but I've never heard anybody deliver it as concisely as you have with the internal and the external and so forth, you know, in the beginning of our conversation. And that was, you know, I feel like a lot of people need that simple, this is it. It's just, you know, like gremlins. Don't feed them after midnight. You know, it's 3 things. You can do this, you know.
Now, inside of those 3 things, there's a lot of work to do.
I understand,
But we can't just say it's peer pressure, or we can't just say they were born an addict, or we can't just say it's a brain disease. You know, I really can't stand that. America is such a talking point country. You know, just watch these Fox and CNN and MSNBC and all these idiots get up there and they say the same thing. They get their talking points in the morning. Here's what you say. Use this, use this, use this. None of the questions ever get answered. You know, I'm CNN's afraid of me. MSNBC's afraid of me. Fox News is afraid of me. I'm telling you, they really are.
They're all getting the pharmaceutical money, so they got to be afraid of you.
We're the only country in the world that puts direct-to-consumer marketing of pharmaceutical drugs on TV. No other country does it. Somebody told me the other day, oh, no, New Zealand does it. I said, yeah, they did. And in 2015, you know what happened? They had an opioid epidemic, and they were losing tens of thousands of people. And they said, let's take those drugs off our television sets. And they did. Someone told me recently, nope, I was in Canada, and I saw pharmaceutical drugs on TV. And I said, yeah, I guarantee you were watching American channels. And he says, oh, I guess I was. Yeah, I know you were.
Of course.
Because the Canadian government, as stupid as the Canadian government is by just legalizing recreational marijuana across the entire continent, entire country, they don't put direct-to-consumer marketing of pharmaceutical drugs on their television sets. So, you know, I challenge any network, any media personnel. I don't want to argue with people. I hate arguing. I don't want to fight with people. I hate fighting. My favorite thing that happens when we're talking and I'm learning, I mean, I'm teaching and I'm presenting and I'm speaking and everything, if someone can come up afterwards and show me how I'm wrong, it's my favorite thing in the world that happened. I love when people show me and prove me wrong, because then you know what? I learn.
Yeah.
I learn. And then I never utter that erroneous fact again, and I get taught, and now I'm better at presenting.
I'm on the same page, man. I hate the echo chamber. I want to learn new stuff, you know? So.
Oh, I like that, the echo chamber.
Yeah.
I got to use that. I hope you don't mind.
Feel free.
John Age echo chamber. Yeah. There's a lot of echo chambers going on. And so anyway, you know, we've got to, I mean, not everybody wants people to live. I mean, there's some people out there right now that want to kill a baby after it's born and call it abortion.
Yeah, we were covering that before you got on.
Yeah. I don't want to fight with people on that either. Abortion is murder.
Yeah.
That's where I stand, and I'm proud to say it. I'm pro-life. Hey, listen, if the mom's going to die, and you could prove that to me, and there's issues, but if you're going to deliver a baby to dilation, and
oh,
you're
that's
in
so
labor,
sick.
Don't kill it. Call me up. I'll take it. And me and my wife, we can't afford a chihuahua, okay? We got a chihuahua. We can't even afford that stupid thing. But if you want to give me and us your kids, I'll take them. Like, I'll take them. I'll borrow money. I'll beg people. I used to beg, borrow, and steal. So now I just beg and borrow. You know, stealing got me in a lot of trouble. But, you know, I'm just passionate about that personally. But I don't really go public with that kind of stuff because that's not my fight. My fight is addiction. My fight is mental health. My fight is suicide among adolescents. Number one cause of death for adolescents is accidents. 14 to 24, number one cause of death is accidents. One third of those accidents happen behind the wheel of a car. 90% of those accidents behind the wheel of a car happen because of drugs and alcohol. Texting is involved about 75% of the time, but drugs and alcohol is involved 90% of the time. So your number one cause of death for kids is drug and alcohol induced into an accident. Number two cause of death for kids, 14 to 24, is suicide. I've never heard of a suicide that I've known of someone that wasn't drug-related. But 90% of suicides are drug-related, pharmaceutical drugs or illicit drugs. Number three cause of death for adolescents, 14 to 24, is murder, homicide. All drug-related. Stealing drugs, hitting drugs, it's all drug-related. And the number four cause of death for 14 to 24 is drugs and alcohol. So your number one cause of losing our children in this country is drugs and alcohol. One out of three college freshmen drop out their freshman year. So you put that Gerber fund together when they're born, and you save all their life, and you put your little college fund, you have your 529 plan, and you have all this stuff, and you work, and you put them in baseball and hockey and football and choir and band and drama, and you you take them to Huntington Learning Center and you buy all the little stuff and you get your kid and all your schools and administrators and educators are great people and they make sure they teach all those standardized tests, right? And then you get your kid into college and you're so proud, you're posting on Facebook that you're setting up their dorm room, right? And you've met their roommates and they seem like such good kids from good families, you know, because they told you how they go to church and everything. And then you're getting calls Thanksgiving, between Thanksgiving break and Christmas break from little daughter or son. They need to come home because they're on academic probation. You wonder why they're dropping out of college because you never really had the drug talk. You had it one time and that was check off that box. And then your elementary school brought in the DARE program and the cop who's untrained on addiction is telling these little kids that people who do drugs are bad people, right? And little Johnny has an older brother who's a heroin addict now. And so now he's hurt because the cop is calling his older brother a bad person and he can't concentrate because, you know, we don't take tonsils out anymore and he's got adenoid swelling and so now he can't concentrate. So the school psychologist diagnoses him with ADHD and off to the pediatrician he goes and sticking crystal meth in his mouth, which is what Ritalin is, right? And now nicotine, the vaping devices, is we should do a whole show on vaping. The tobacco industry has figured out a way to hook the next generation of smokers. And parents need to wake up because if you have an elementary school or middle school or high school student right now, you're in big trouble because every single one of your children has a bullseye on their head and the tobacco industry is looking how they get them hooked on flavored nicotine. You find out your 14-year-old kid's addicted to nicotine, good luck. Go find out how you get them off of it because you could go to Walmart, Target, you could go to your grocery store, the pharmacy, and pull that Nicorette box down off the shelf and turn it around and see what it says on the back. Not recommended under the age of 18. Lozenges, gum, all the same way. Chantix, the pharmaceutical chemical answer to nicotine addiction, not recommended under the age of 18. You find out your 13, 14, 15-year-old kid's addicted to nicotine, you don't have a clear path to getting them help. I had a mom tell me the other day, she took her 13-year-old daughter to the pediatrician because the daughter can't stop vaping. She's addicted to nicotine. And the pediatrician put her on Xanax.
Oh, man. So now she's down the rabbit hole with another prescription chasing.
Oh, and she's still vaping because I don't have enough time to tell you what a benzodiazepine and nicotine does to each other. But anyway, we're in big trouble, ladies and gentlemen. But yeah, we should do a whole show on vaping and nicotine devices.
God, it's funny. Excuse me. It's funny. I've tried to sort of not talk about my own stuff during the show, but almost every guest makes me want to. I'll just give you the cliff notes. I teach in the cult of academia. I think it's a cult. And my wife works in it. We're at the university. And I'm trying to get out of it. People sort of think I'm kidding. I'm not kidding. I'm trying to get out of the cult. But, I mean, both of us have sort of the bird's eye view to what this stuff does amongst students. And it's sad, man. My wife went to something not too long ago that was it was a training thing, and it was teaching about the drugs on campus and what to look for and not to look for. And bottom line, you know, to connect back with what you were saying about the young lady at the beginning going and getting all A's, you know, they didn't really talk much about heroin because they said by the time they get to university, most people aren't doing heroin if they're attending classes and getting good grades and so forth and so on. And I was thinking, that seems like a lot of bull.
Totally untrue.
Yeah.
Totally untrue. I mean, it's an oxymoron phrase, but functioning addict, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You're not a functioning addict, but a functioning drug user, oh, they're all over the place. Mm. Ask Tiger Woods.
Yeah.
Know? So, that's really, you know, a lot of people, academia is a cult, I agree with you. I'm the first ex-con in America appointed to a county college board of trustees.
Oh, man.
So in New Jersey, in Cumberland County, New Jersey, I was appointed as a trustee to our county college. by a very progressive freeholder board. Okay. And so I did 6 years, and my nickname was the troublemaker, because I didn't vote like everybody else voted. And I asked a lot of questions. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people join boards of directors of different nonprofits, and they become trustees at colleges, and they do those things so they can put it on the resume. Right. That's
exactly.
Why 75% of the reason people do anything like that, give of themselves like that, is because what's in it for me? Mm-hmm. You know, how am I going to benefit from this? And I was a student on that campus, and I did my bachelor's degree there at a university partnership program. And I loved that school, and I loved New Jersey, and I loved Cumberland County. Poorest county, top of every list that you wish you were at the bottom of every list that you wish you were at the top of, you know? Mm-hmm. That was where I felt I could do the most difference. And, I mean, I won't really get into all the problems of New Jersey. I mean, they're public enough. New Jersey is the number one state for people moving out of. Number one, 2018. More people left New Jersey than any other state. New York was number two. California was number three. But academia and college, it's horrible. I spent 6 years as a trustee. I spent 4 years as a trustee, and then you get reappointed for a second term of 4 years. And I served the whole 4 years, and I was like, there is no way I'm getting reappointed. No way. And then they reappointed me. It was unbelievable. And the outgoing president was like, oh, my God, they reappointed him? He's nothing but trouble, that guy.
That's so hilarious.
I lasted 2 years, and I moved out of New Jersey, so I was a Tennessee resident. But I could have kept residency in New Jersey. I was thinking about it because I was a trustee at the community college. It meant a lot to me. I really know I was making a difference. In the 6 years I was there, they increased tuition 5 of the 6 years. And I voted against tuition increases every single year. But anyway, I was one vote of 9 votes. So, you know, I swayed a couple other people once in a while, but I couldn't sway everybody. And so, but academia and college campuses, it's unbelievable. They're liberal, you know, left-wing, anti-freedom of speech, you know, problems all across the country. I see it everywhere I go, everywhere I go. And I used to go to a lot of colleges to speak. And quite frankly, I don't go to a lot of colleges anymore, because I basically get told when I get there or when I'm booking or before I go that they basically give you a list of things they really don't want you to talk about. And there's some things that they ban you from talking about. And I said, oh, no, you're hiring the wrong speaker.
Forget exactly.
It. So I hate it. You know, and I'm not a Republican. Trust me, I'm not a Republican.
Yeah,
right?
We're in the same demographic.
I'm 100% against the death penalty for everyone. Even the guy in Colorado who just murdered his pregnant wife and stuck his 2 little kids in oil vats, okay? I don't want to see him die by lethal injection. I'm 100% against the death penalty.
Man.
I could tell you 20 issues that I'm anti-Republican, and I could tell you 220 issues I'm anti-Democrat, right? But liberals act like everyone should have tolerance, but they're not tolerant of anyone who disagrees with them. And it's really horrible. So I'm non-politically correct. I call myself the Donald Trump of addiction and recovery. So
that's awesome.
I get in a lot of trouble. I get in a lot of trouble, but I tell the truth. So, you know, I tell the truth.
People don't want you to do that, especially on college campuses.
Well, instead of brainwashing our kids, and instead of, you know, teaching them things, we should show them and let them make their own minds up, you know. But we shouldn't discount their feelings and their. I mean, I know professors, and I got into it with a lot of people. I know students who would come to me and they'd say, "You seem like somebody who listens." And I go, "What's the problem?" And they're like, "Well, you know, I'm not allowed to share my views in class. I'm not allowed to share my views in class. What are?" And I get poor grades on my papers because my position papers or my argumentative papers argue for something that's anti, you know, establishment. And so it's just wrong. It's wrong. And our media is the same way. you know, Fox is the same way. Fox News, CNN, MSNBC, headline news, they're all the same. ABC, CBS, NBC. I guess that's why I don't get voted. I invited on a lot of media shows, you know. So,
Lord. Michael, you read my mind, man. I was thinking the same things as you because I've been that guy, and I still am, I guess, on campus where people want to talk to me. Like, students always want to tell me those stories just like you were relating to me then, and I always kind of sit there and go, I don't know what to do with it.
Perrier, just in case anybody's watching Perrier.
But yeah, I always say, I don't know what to do with this, because I'm right above the janitor on campus as far as hierarchy goes, so I can't do much.
Right.
But it's, well, you know, it's pervasive everywhere. It's the same sort of stories.
Well, you know, you said something earlier that was really interesting. You said, you know, you and your wife feel like aliens, right?
Yeah, true.
Because you never did drugs and you never drank alcohol. Listen, there are more people like you and your wife than there are like me.
Really?
I promise you. And no one speaks up about that. I mean, think about, give you an analogy. You go to dinner with your wife, right?
Mm-hmm.
And make sure you should take your wife out because
yeah.
we don't take our wives out enough and we don't treat our wives.
That's the truth. We got Valentine's Day coming up.
Oh yeah, I hate Valentine's Day.
Me too.
I don't want them to tell me what day to be nice to my wife.
Exactly.
So I celebrate Valentine's Day on February 17th because everything is 70% off, right?
That's my wife's birthday, so I got the double whammy.
Oh gosh, wow. So you all right, celebrate the birthday, but celebrate Valentine's Day three days later. But you go out to dinner and you have the best service. The waiter, the waitress is unbelievable. They're over the top. It just, you know, bubbly, and the service is great. The food comes out great so fast you can't even, it's all hot. Everything's delicious. The manager comes by the table and checks on you, and the atmosphere, there's no problems. The music, everything is perfect.
Yeah.
And you leave and you go home and you're lying in bed at night. You're like, you know, that was one of the best dinners we've ever had, right? Right. And you don't tell anybody. You don't really tell the waitress. You don't tell the manager. You don't call. You don't go on the website. You don't give a Yelp review, right?
Mm-hmm.
You just experience a good dining night out, right? You go a couple days later, and the waitress is having a real bad day, okay? They might even, like, smell a little bit because they didn't take a shower, and they've been there for two shifts, right? The food is cold. It takes forever to get out. You wait 30 minutes for an appetizer, 45 minutes for an entree. It's horrible. No one checks on you. And so you go to the front, and the manager's there, and he happens to be coming in from a smoke break, okay, because he was outside smoking outside, right? And you just lit into him. You just light into him. You tell him how horrible it was, blah, 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 blah. We always tell them when things are bad, but we don't tell them when things are good. Right. And we need to tell people when things are good, too. But that's the analogy I'm giving you, because people like you don't really speak up because you think you're the outlier. You're the atypical person who never traveled down that path. And kids don't see enough of you. They see too much of me. I'm in there. And then in America, we don't focus on prevention. We spend all our money on the after effects, all our money on the consequences, all our money on prison system, all our money on at-risk kids, all our money on alternative schools, all our money on medication, when all we got to do is keep these damn phones out of the hands of 1, 2, and 3-year-old children. Parents can actually be parents and get involved in their kids' life. We can stop teaching standardized tests in schools, and we can start teaching kids about self-worth and self-value and spiritual principles. And we can stop letting this many people in this country tell us about separation of church and state. Okay. I had a constitutional right to a Bible in prison. Well, maybe if I had a Bible in my desk in middle school and elementary school, I wouldn't have needed a Bible in prison. But, and I respect all faiths. Muslims, Jews, Buddhists, Hindi. Hey, listen, even atheists, I respect you. I don't want to have anything to do with you, but I respect you. If you don't believe in God, I don't know how, we don't have anything in common after that. Okay.
Yeah.
If you call your God something else, I have a friend who calls God her. Okay. And that's fine. I mean, that's for you, not fine for me. But
yeah.
I have my faith and I know my truth. I know the truth. But I'm going to respect all people of all faiths. I'm an interfaith person. But we don't even want any faith in our system. We don't want any faith. It's just, it's appalling. It's appalling. So kids got to hear more from people like you that being cool is really not doing drugs. Being cool is really not drinking alcohol. You know, being cool is not getting high. Being cool is not vaping, you know, cool kids. So,
yeah, I think it's hard because it's so inundated into every aspect of the media. I swear, like, I don't even know how many times I've just quit watching a movie because I'm like, here we go again. Here's the normalizing of drugs. And it used to just be booze, and now they're throwing weed and coke, and everything's good now. It's in just about every movie. It's normal now.
Yeah, John, follow the money. Follow the money. So
it's just sad. I mean, I can see it as an adult, but I mean, you know, your average 10-year-old or 12-year-old just going, okay, well, this is what we're supposed to do, I guess, because it's in every song, it's in every movie, TV show.
Yep. Well, people can go to steeredstraight.org and see what I'm doing. Michael Reagan De Leon on Facebook. I post every single day what I'm doing, where I'm going, a lot of stuff that people aren't aware of. You know, for 3 years, I've been screaming at the top of my lungs about methamphetamine and cocaine and how they were coming back with a vengeance. I did a couple of trips to South America. I talked to so many people that I work with throughout the world. I have so many friends at the DEA. That's kind of weird for me. I have so many friends in HIDA, high-intensity drug trafficking areas, and I'm obsessed with this. I only sleep 3 hours a day every single day, and the last 2 days, zero. I'm going up on my third day with zero sleep. I will sleep tonight, but I'm obsessed. I research. I have 4 computer screens sitting in front of me, you're on one and 3 stuff's on the other while we've been talking. I'm literally reading new articles that are coming up. So if people want to follow me on Facebook, it's Michael Reagan De Leon, or I have a public page, Michael De Leon. And I try to get people to understand what's going on, but I don't just want to, a lot of people are like, oh my God, they confiscated 32 pounds of fentanyl today. Somebody should do something about this. Oh my God, this was an overdose. This was happening. That happened. Okay, where's the solutions? I know what's going on. I know what's going on. Where's the solutions? That's what I'm all about, solutions. I'm all about solutions, solving the problem. So,
man. So what would you say would be the number one thing people need to do if they have a child, if they don't have a child? How can they help figure this problem out?
How can they help the overall problem
or their own children, either one?
Well, I guess you know, get involved and get educated. Find out what's going on in your area, your little neck of the woods. It's very easy to do. Most states have Division of Addiction Studies, places that you can go find out what's going on in your area, your state police, your Department of Health, your local law enforcement. You can find out what's going on in your area specific, because certain areas are a little bit more prevalent in certain things and certain drugs. Certain places have real good treatment for, you know, state funded treatment for people without insurance. Certain places are a lot worse with medication-assisted treatment versus abstinence. It's just get involved and learn. Carter Woodson was an amazing African-American author, scholar. And he's basically credited with Black History Month in February. And I don't know, I guess this airs live, right? Or something.
Well, it'll go up after we get finished, yeah.
So it's in February. It's Black History Month.
Oh, right? Yeah. It'll be in February, absolutely.
And I don't know why we have Black History Month anyway. Every month should be Black History Month. Every month should be Native American History Month. Every month should be, you know, History Month. But anyway, Carter Woodson is pretty much credited as the father of Black History Month. And in my top 10 sayings of all time, he's one of my top 3, right? And he said, the mere imparting of information is not education. Merely imparting information on someone is not education. So handing out booklets, a lot of schools on Red Ribbon Week, the 1 week in October when schools feel comfortable about teaching kids about the one thing that's affecting all their kids more than anything else in the year, right? They take out those little 5 days and they'll have little themes during the week. Monday's football jersey day, Tuesday's Western day, you know, Wednesday's hat day, Thursday's jeans day, whack as hell. And so I asked people about that. I said, why do you do that? Well, you know, unity, coming all together. Great. Okay. You should do that all year if you really think about it. Or you should do that 1 week a month if you think about it. Red Ribbon Week should be really on educating kids about drugs, but I don't even like that. That should be all the time. I have a whole year-long program. Educates kids about drugs and the causal factors for an entire school year. But Carter Woodson is credited with saying merely imparting information on people is not education. We got to teach. So just going to look things up and learning, you got to learn about situations and solutions, and you got to learn about what you can do. So, you know, I'm a nonprofit organization, so Steered Straight needs money. I need money. I have 4 films I'm trying to get produced. We're out of funds. Anything will help. We have rates for schools across the country, and 1/3 of the schools pay our rate, 1/3 of the schools pay less than our rate, and 1/3 of the schools don't have any money. They're completely free. 3 schools today I did for completely free. And the schools that pay our rate, and they enable me to do the ones that don't have any money. So I want to help. I want to be, I have a train the trainer program. I want to train people how to speak. I did 616 school presentations in 2018. I can't, even if I did 700 a year, if I did it every year until I was 200 years old, I wouldn't hit every school in America, right? So other people need to do the same thing, but I don't want them just going and talking to kids about drugs. Some of these people are incredible, gifted speakers, but they're telling kids the wrong thing. We can't be a talking point. Answer to this. We've got to really, truly educate kids on drugs, but we have to educate staff. We have to educate parents. We have to educate community. I had a mom tell me the other day about the vape. She goes, it's just flavored water. And I said, flavored water? Who told you that? She goes, my son told me. Does he vape? She says, yeah. I said, how old is he? She says, 14. I said, okay, your 14-year-old kid told you he's just vaping flavored water.
And this is an adult that's just taking the word of their kid.
And in fairness to that kid, he might think he's vaping.
Yeah, that's true. Water. He may.
So, but getting involved with Steered Straight, I need to get other speakers trained. I want to take my program all across the country. All of our films are on our website. 2 of our films are on YouTube, and the links are on our website. So people can watch the movies and really get educated about what's really happening. Finding out about testing, you know, a lot of times I believe that we can eliminate 50% of high school drug experimentation by doing one thing. Every parent of a 6th, 7th, and 8th grader should randomly drug test their kid 3 times a year, all 3 years. 9 drug tests for middle school students. People say, you're crazy. Why would I drug test my 6th grader? He's not on drugs. Okay. First of all, how do you know? But hopefully he's not on drugs, which is why you should drug test him. And they're like, what do you mean? If he's not on drugs, why would I drug test him? That's the problem with drug tests. We use drug tests for the wrong reason. We use drug tests in America to find out people are on drugs, when drug tests should be used as a deterrent so people don't go on drugs. It's a preventive deterrent tool. It's not catching them on drugs. So if you put your 6th, 7th, and 8th grader on a random drug test 3 times a year for all 3 years of middle school, you'll eliminate 50%. You'll lower in half the chance they'll experiment with drugs in high school, because most experimentation happens between 5th and 8th grade. Experimentation 50% of the time is 40% of the time is happening in high school. They've already experimented. Now the use has escalated in high school, so the deterrent is out the window. You can only deter kids in middle school, my opinion. So if you randomly drug test 3 times a year for 3 years, 6th, 7th, and 8th grade, what you give your child is a deterrent mechanism. You give your child an answer for the kid who asks them to use drugs or try drugs. They can turn around to that kid and say, my mom is nuts. She drug tested. Can you believe that? Drug testing me. It's crazy. If I get high with you and I get caught on a drug test, I lose my iPhone 10. And I'm not losing my iPhone 10. So it gives the kids the deterrent ability to say no. So 75% of parents tell me they would never do that. They say, oh, I would never drug test my kid. I want my kid to know I trust them. I said, okay. I'm not going to tell you that's wrong. I disagree, but I was the worst parent in the world. So I'm not going to tell parents how to be parents, right? But I can tell you that I believe it's incorrect. And if you want your kid to trust that, if you want your kid to know that you trust them, that's really the biggest manipulation tool kids develop. Of course, I'm not on drugs, Mom. No, I wasn't drinking. They didn't have alcohol there. No, I don't know any kids. None of my friends do drugs. What? And you believe them. Well, you're really endangering them by believing them, if you think about it. So I was trying to come up with a way that parents could drug test their kids without their kids knowing about it. So I was like, I guess they could cut their hair off while they're sleeping and send them off for a hair follicle test. That's kind of extreme, right? They could steal their toothbrush and do DNA. That's kind of extreme, right? And then the mouthwash kills the alcohol, the drug. Anyway, so how can I get this to happen? So standing at the airport one day, waiting on a flight, going through TSA, and I watched this person get randomly selected, and they took a little white swab like this, and they rubbed it on their hands, and they rubbed it on their book bag, and they rubbed it on their laptop, and they stuck it in a machine. And the machine beeped, and they said, thank you very much. Have a nice day. And I found out that those swabs detect powder and liquid bomb-making residue, right? And so we're testing, and they randomly test people. Randomly test people. You never know if you're going to get randomly selected. The whole idea of random, right? So my bells went off in my head, and I'm like, there's my answer. So I found out who makes that technology. I called him up, got him on the phone. He lives in Colorado. He's an unbelievable genius. And I told him my idea. So over the last 2 years, we've developed a test that parents can take into their kid's room, and they could take a little swab, and they could rub it on their desk, rub it on their tablet, rub it on their book bag, and then rub it on a panel. And the panel has a texture on it. And if it turns red, it's positive for THC, marijuana. We've developed cocaine, heroin, methamphetamine. This month, fentanyl comes out. Next month, nicotine comes out. So you want to find out if your kid's vaping? I could give you a test. And I wanted this test to be around $10. I figured if it got to be 10 bucks, that's cheap enough for parents to buy it. Well, this man got the test to $2.50.
Oh, man.
$2.50, four tests for $10. So you buy a kit of four, and you could test. You could buy one marijuana, one cocaine, one heroin, one meth test. I recommend for kids, buy pot, okay? Buy pot tests. Buy four pot tests and test your kid once in a while. If you don't want to drug test your kid, okay, drug test their room. Drug test their book bag. Drug test their bedroom. Drug test their nightstand. And it'll cost you $2.50 to do it. I think your kid's worth $2.50. So steeredstraight.org, STEERED STRAIGHT, steeredstraight.org. And right at the top of steeredstraight.org, there's a little box. It has the Today Show on it, went to the Today Show with the test, and it's called Parents and Pot. Click that box. It'll take you right to the thing, and you can order four drug tests for $10, and you can find out all about if there's THC anywhere in your child's room.
Wow. I like that idea, man. That sounds amazing. I like it.
And now if you found out THC's in your child's room, guess what? Now you know you have a problem. You don't have to wonder, okay? You don't have to wonder. You know you have a problem. And you don't even have to tell your kids you're doing it. Parents and Pot Marijuana Test Kit on my website, steeredstraight.org. Please buy it. Now, I'm 100% transparent. I always tell people I'm a guy with a lot of skeletons, but I don't have any closets, right? So I'm totally transparent. If you order a kit of four for $10, steered straight, our nonprofit organization gets a dollar. We get a quarter a kit. We get a dollar if you buy a kit for $10. But I just want people to know I have a reason. I have an incentive to push it. If you think a quarter is my incentive to push the kit, trust me, it's not my incentive. But I need money desperately. Steered Straight's broke. I produced four films. I'm producing my fifth one. We're out of distribution money. I don't have any money left. So we're trying to figure out how to come out with four more films. I have a whole parent program I'm trying to launch. I have a book called Table Talks. You can get it on Amazon, Table Talks, or you can get it right on our website. And it's 364 conversations that you can have with your kids for the entire year. One conversation every night of the year that you can have. And only one third of it is on drugs and alcohol. Two thirds of it are on self-worth, self-value, coping skills, escape mechanisms. I have a whole curriculum on my website called Success for Teens. It's all free. I have links to the best educational material you'll ever get called Drug Free World at drugfreeworld.org. And so you can order them all through my website. I'm not just trying to tell parents what's going on. I'm trying to teach parents what's going on and give them solutions so it doesn't happen to them.
Wow. I'm sold, man. I would like to be down with this. I like it, man.
All right, so I need a Table Talk book ordered tonight. Put it right right on your shelf behind you. Order a kit of 10 kit, four kits.
Yeah, man, this is great.
You know, schools need to order the kits too, because I talked to a principal the other day. He said they're sending out all confiscated vapes to see if they test positive for marijuana. And I said, wow, how much does that cost? And he said, $400. I said, how about if it was $2.50? He said, what do you mean? I had a swab kit in my laptop bag. I said, have you confiscated a vape recently? He said, I just got one this morning. I said, pull it out. And he pulled it out, and I pulled my swab out, and I rubbed it all on the top, the inside of the swab. I rubbed it on the panel. Within 30 seconds, it was turning red. I said, if you want to send that out for confirmation, go ahead, but you don't have to. There's THC in that vape.
Wow. I love your idea of trying to do this all across the U.S. too, with different people doing it. I love that, man. That sounds great.
Yeah, I want all different kinds, and I don't want everybody who's on drugs. You know, you're just as important as a message to kids as I am, because I don't have to tell kids what not to do. I can show them what to do, following your footsteps. And so we don't do enough of that. You know, I think when parents tell kids that they never drank and never do drugs, kids don't believe them.
Yes, true.
Because they don't hear from you. They don't hear from people like you. So.
Well, I will definitely share all the links I can. I love what you're doing, man.
I really appreciate it.
And I'd love to have you on again just to talk about the e-vaping and some more of your story, man. This is great stuff.
Definitely. I'll definitely do it. People need to understand the seriousness of e-cigarettes and vaping devices. They need to understand it's the tobacco industry that's behind 100% of it. They need to understand that the target is kids. This was designed to hook the next generation of smokers. And they need to understand not so much susceptibility to addiction, which for me is 50%, but not just susceptibility to addiction. When you stimulate the adolescent brain with nicotine, it's the health consequences. These chemicals become volatile organic compounds when they're heated up and enter the lungs. And we're going to have a pulmonary pandemic on our hands inside of 5 years. So people need to know, and I want people to know.
Me too. Well, I think we'll leave it there for right now. Thank you so much, Michael De Leon, for being on the program. Please check out his website, steeredstraight.org. He's got a wealth of material. If you haven't gathered just that from this conversation, you're missing something. And just to piggyback on what you were saying, I love you really kind of connected to what I like to say at the end of the program without really meaning to, but I always like to tell people you can't do everything, but you can do something. And you are a living example of that, man. Thank you so much for all you're doing.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
Definitely. Please check out AnomicAge.com for all things me and the program. All of his guest links will be there. The video and audio will be there as well. So please check us out, and in doing so, check out his work. Thank you so much.
Thank you, John.
Thank you for listening to The Anomic Age, a John Age project. For past shows, further info, and to comment, go to AnomicAge.com. That's AnomicAge.com. Till next time, thank you for listening to The Anomic Age. I'm